Coming up, get Esberry, Heaney, and Nikias Duncan talking about everything going on around the NBA. Kawhi Leonard, Summer League, AJ versus DP. AD, what's going to happen there? We got a lot to talk about. Joining me from NBA Summer League in Las Vegas, from The Athletic, it's S. Marahini. What's up, S?
Man, living the dream, as they say. Summer League is always fun. I was just explaining that it's a lot like Comic-Con. I've always wanted to go to San Diego Comic-Con. If anybody wants to pay me to go to San Diego Comic-Con, that's completely fine. But it's great. It's always a great vibe to see the young guys coming out to meet and mingle with a bunch of people. But it's good vibes, man.
It is good vibes. And we had a premier matchup tonight between the number one pick, AJ DiBonta of the Washington Wizards, and the number two pick, Darren Peterson of the Utah Jazz. Longtime rivals going back to high school, faced off through college at BYU in Kansas, and they had another matchup tonight, their first in NBA uniforms. And it was a close, competitive game. AJ DiBonta had 27 points, tying Blake Griffin for the most by a player in their Summer League
we
debut.
We got Summer League records. Let's go.
Tied record on 7 of 18 from the field. He had 7 rebounds as well. Pulled himself out late in the game, fouling Peterson with what looked like a hamstring type of injury. Yeah. And then Peterson on his side of things had 24 points on 6 of 18. Not his most efficient shooting night after really lighting it up with the Salt Lake City Summer League there. I thought both of them had moments. We saw in the first half, AJ had his monster dunk. Peterson had like a nasty step back off balance three shortly after that. Peterson made some great defensive plays.
Yes.
DiBonta got to the rim at will. They were inefficient. It's just Summer League. No overreacting to that aspect of it. But for you, S, what was your main takeaway from either AJ or DP or both?
Look, I think the number one takeaway, I will say, is that there is so much excitement for Wizards and Jazz fans. Looking at this court and looking at this arena, this is the most amount of Wizards and Jazz jerseys I've ever seen in my life. Genuinely ever seen in my life. And I think that that excitement is palpable. So when you see guys like AJ DiBonta and Darren Peterson on the floor, I think DiBonta, his size jumps out almost immediately. There's a couple of guys that I watched today and I'm like, these guys are boys amongst or men amongst boys. And AJ DiBonta clearly is that. You talked about his dunk, his driving, his physicality. I also thought he had a couple of really nice defensive possessions where he would switch out onto the perimeter. You could see him being this wildly versatile defender. And to think about what that means for the Washington Wizards, who have a lot of versatile defensive players, it should make you very excited for the future. Yes, inefficiency. I don't care. Take 100 shots in the Summer League for all I care. That's not my thing at all. It's like, just try out what's possible for you in your game. And with Peterson, I agree this wasn't his most efficient night. I think the one thing that jumped out to me was how he dealt with physicality. I think some of the, especially defensively, you could see him getting pushed off his spot a little bit more. On the offensive side, when he's maneuvering pick and rolls, you could see that he's kind of going wide instead of trying to fight through contact. And I think that will be a hurdle as he heads into the NBA. We saw it today because Washington is a bigger, more physical team. Like a Trey Johnson is there. He's obviously second-year guy. Will Riley, second-year guy. Like, these guys are a little bit beefier, you know.
Jameer Watkins,
great point-of attack defender, absolutely. And then you have DiBonta kind of at that back line. And so I think some of the physicality for Washington messed with Darren Peterson a little bit. That's something natural that he's going to have to figure out moving forward. But again, they both had inefficient nights. DiBonta loves that turnaround fadeaway jumper.
Well, before we get to DiBonta on Peterson,
okay,
eight turnovers with Peterson. Yes. And I think to your point, you're hitting the nail on the head there. Utah, it's like they're still tanking. They don't have a point guard.
Yeah.
It's like they're not trying to win right now, which is understandable. It's Summer League. It's about development. They're just throwing Peterson out there, throwing Cody Williams out there saying, go create. You guys, go create.
Figure it out.
Yeah. And I think they're trying to, and there's been highs for Peterson, and there's been some clear lows as well, for sure. And he'll be playing next to Keontae George and tons of other talented players on the actual Utah Jazz that's going to mitigate the need for him to create against these higher-level defenders. With DiBonta, turnaround aspect you mentioned, he was 2 for 13 on shots outside of the paint. Okay,
that tracks. Matches the eye test. Yes,
I have not looked too much at social media. I got a text in a group chat I'm in saying people are raving about DiBonta. I didn't think he was that good.
Yeah.
I wasn't that impressed from DiBonta tonight, personally. Considering I love DiBonta, I'm a huge fan of DiBonta.
Yeah.
At least from sitting there in the arena tonight, I was not on socials during it.
Yeah.
I thought he was very underwhelming in this game. If it was my first time seeing him, I'm like, really? 2 for 13 outside the paint? He got to the rim a little bit? Yeah. I want to see this guy hit some shots off the dribble, contested shots against high-level defenders, and that's what he's going to have to do for the actual Washington Wizards when he's playing alongside Trae Young and Trey Johnson, who had a really good night for the Wizards on the really offensive end, at least.
Yes.
Never mind if Anthony Davis is still there and all the other veteran guys that they have and all the other ball handlers, Keyshawn George, Will Riley. It's a long list. Bob Carrington.
Yep.
There's a lot of guys that are going to be getting touches. DiBonta's not going to get to be DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
With these turnarounds.
Yeah, where is the offensive touches going to come for with DiBonta? It's a fascinating question because I had that exact same take when I was watching. I'm like, man, the Wizards have so many guys. You listed a bunch of them now, but there's just
a long list.
It's really a long list of like very good players, young guys who also they're young enough to where they're not ready yet to compete, but they also need the developmental touches to eventually get to that point, including AJ DiBonta. And so I agree with you that it wasn't his most efficient night. I think the one thing that really jumps out to you with AJ, at least it did for me in this game, was the defensive versatility. I know he didn't have a great offensive game, but you see what his potential is defensively. And I think that's why there's such a high ceiling to what he eventually can become. The tools are all there. It's just about refining it. And to your point about touches and where that development is going to come from, I do kind of question the environment. Like, is that going to be the right spot for him to get to a ceiling because there's so many guys there? Because you have Trae Young, because Anthony Davis, obviously all of those young guys that also need developmental opportunities. It makes me wonder if that's the case. If AJ can really thrive in year one as maybe a guy in Washington.
Well, I don't think he's a good bet to win Rookie of the Year for all the reasons you're hitting on there. However, I found it interesting tonight. If you looked across from where I was sitting, there was a long line of Wizards. The whole Wizards roster was there. AD was there. Trae Young was there. Everybody was there.
Which was cool.
It was cool. It's nice. Yeah. They were there. And then next to them was the front office and ownership and Ace DiBonta. AJ DiBonta's father sitting right there in the middle of the front office.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's back at BYU. It's like right there, right there with the brass.
Yes.
The organization just sitting in the middle of it.
Listen, man, when you're the number one overall pick, you get the keys pretty quickly. And I know there's Trae Young. I know there's Anthony Davis.
Something to monitor.
It is something to monitor. I agree with you. I think it's really interesting to see how that stuff works when there's a young talent that comes into a group of guys who are still trying to prove themselves. Like, AJ very clearly has been catered to be, you are the guy. You will be the guy moving forward in your career. But so was Trae Young. So was Anthony Davis. I bet you to a certain extent, you know, Trae Johnson was as well, and Keyshawn George was as well. How do all of those guys, like, this is a big question for Brian Keefe as head coach of the Wizards. It's like, can he galvanize this group to play like a team, or are they going to be a bunch of individuals?
And will AD even be there?
Yeah.
Will he even be there? He was there tonight.
I was surprised he was here today. I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah.
I mean, it's intriguing. It is intriguing. It shows that he's at least committed to his boys,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
The guys in that locker room.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, with the front office, do they want to pay him the 5-year, 200-something million dollar extension that he wants?
Yeah.
Regardless of whatever that number reaches, or is this all public negotiating that's happening right now with the Warriors? Oh, we're out. It's Cavaliers are the favorite. The Heat are the favorite. The Sixers are the favorite. The Warriors, they're in the top left corner of Rich Paul's whiteboard. Is that all just about trying to push them towards trading for AD, giving up what Washington would deem necessary to move off him? How much of this is about the money aspect? Only time will tell.
Yeah.
My impression is that with LeBron waiting, part of it is that he's waiting for this AD situation to play out just to know. Like, would another team trade for him? Golden State or somebody else?
Yeah.
Is Washington even willing to trade him? Just letting the situation play out. There's no rush.
No.
There's no rush for LeBron James.
There's never a rush. And, I mean, can you blame him for not rushing himself? I mean, this is his final season of his career, potentially.
Maybe, potentially.
Yeah.
I think he's going to play multiple more.
You think he'll play
multiple more? Two or three more would be my prediction.
Two or three more.
That's my prediction.
He's 41.
I don't care. He's still a 25 player.
LeBron, he can decline.
No, he can decline and still be a really good role player.
Sure. Yeah.
He's
the greatest.
Year three, year 45-year-old LeBron James. What is a 15-minute-per-game LeBron James look like?
Yeah, he's one of the best role players in the NBA.
So what are we even arguing here for? It's a matter of if he wants to be a role player.
I don't think he wants. I mean, look.
What if he wins a fifth ring the next 2 years? Let's say he wins one.
And then he just needs one more to get to.
Exactly. Why would he not hang around?
It's always the carrot at the end of the the treadmill, and you got – I don't know. I don't understand why that would be a thing. I think LeBron should call it a day after this season that's coming up. I will say, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I was thinking about this earlier. In terms of, like, span of a career, which is now 23 seasons, I believe, for LeBron James, he has been, at best, the best player in the world, and at worst, in that span, like, the 20th? Best player in the world. There's never been a player that's been able to do that. No. Kareem wasn't that. Michael Jordan certainly wasn't with the Washington Wizards years. That, I think, is the best case for his GOAT scenario. Is like he is the drop off is so marginal compared to every single player, and that's why he will not be a role player. KOC, he will not do it.
It's the longevity. It's part of the argument with LeBron over Jordan, and we don't need to get into a Jordan versus LeBron debate.
We're here at Summer League. Why not?
Instead, I want to talk about the Warriors versus Mavericks.
Yeah.
Yaxel Lendenburg versus Merez Johnson.
The same thing. The same thing as Michael Jordan. Exactly.
Pretty much. I mean, it really is a debate of who was the best at Michigan. Clearly, the favorite of Dusty May, the new Mavericks head coach, former Michigan Wolverines head coach, they chose Merez Johnson, who tonight had 27 points on 12 of 17, eight boards, five stocks in the game. Yaxel on the other side of that matchup, after having a really sensational California Classic with the Warriors, 21 points, 10 boards, 6 assists tonight. We'll talk about Merez in a second, but Yaxel first.
Mm-hmm.
I thought his passing just looked pristine. It was accurate. It was timely. He threw accurate bounce passes, cross court, just facilitated within the flow of the Warriors' offense. I'm like, wait a minute, S. Yaxel Lendenburg makes Jimmy Butler even more expendable. That's my main takeaway from tonight, with the passing, the creation, the do-it-all ability. That's what Butler does. He fills gaps for your team, except for three-point shooting at volume. Yaxel Lendenburg provides three-point shooting at volume.
Yeah.
And he provides handling. And he provides defensive versatility. And he provides rebounding. If the Warriors have a chance to go get Anthony Davis, and they can give up Jimmy Butler off a torn ACL with multiple first-round picks, swaps, seconds, I don't care what it is, to go get AD and sign LeBron and assure you bring back Draymond Green and eliminate the risk of him leaving somewhere else to go sign with LeBron James, you got to do that.
Yeah.
Not just because of those names, but also because of what Yaxel Lendenburg has been showing this entire month for the Warriors. I think he looks like a guaranteed 10-year-plus vet in the NBA. I don't think it's overreaction. He showed this at UAB in college, transferred to Michigan, played a new role on the wing, and dominated there doing that, wins a national championship. And now with the Warriors, it's just immediately carrying over. It looks so real to me, so sustainable. Not going to shoot 50% from three, obviously, but I'm blown away by Yaxel with what he's shown, man.
I mean, this is why many people, I believe including yourself, mocked Yaxel to the Golden State Warriors, because ultimately he's a guy who's ready to compete and win now. And I think you saw that in this game where, like, he is the full package of what you like from wing players. He can play a role. He can scale up, to your point about being able to scale up and take usage away from other guys. And you need that in the Warriors system. The one thing that I thought of when I was watching Yaxel is, like, they haven't had a player this size do what he's been able to do since, like, Iguodala.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
You know,
he's basically everything they dreamed Kuminga would be.
Yeah. Exactly. And they've been searching for this type of player for so long. They finally have him. And yeah, I agree with you. He is a 10-year vet already, and he understands the game in a really intrinsic way. I know he has a very fun and enigmatic personality, which is cool, too. But you think of him in the Warrior system, I mean, talk about rookie of the year candidates. I don't know if he'll have the offensive usage to do so, but in terms of impact, in terms of winning, I feel like he probably will be an all rookie guy.
If they win 55 games, yeah, there could be a case. I mean, who knows what the team's going to look like, next season.
But I agree with you on the Anthony Davis front. Like, if it means you are getting LeBron, and if you trust in Yaxel to be able to produce like he does or like he did today, you go ahead and do that 10 times out of 10 times.
I mean, it's it's the biggest no-brainer in the world. And it would be the biggest no-brainer if Yaxel were putting up duds to me. Yeah. And that's the way I feel about it. The fact he is shining on the floor, shining as a shooter, shining as a playmaker, shining in every way defensively, he hasn't quite yet. But I trust that that's going to come back, just like it did at Michigan, just like it did at UAB with his versatility.
Yeah.
I trust that'll return. The guy looks like an absolute star role player at worst, and possibly very much more.
Yeah.
Down the line in the NBA, like, I'm just amazed by him. Rez Johnson, I was blown away by him tonight too, in terms of the fact that 27 points in 12 of 17. He hit 1-3 and 1-4, and hopefully that develops for him over time. But the at-rim finishing, the explosiveness, but also he had that little in-between floater, little push shot, and it's like he just looks like a just a maniac out there during those messy summer league games.
Yeah.
He's just under control, flying around. I love his energy. I love his intensity. That's why they chose him over the other Michigan guys.
Again, man against boys. Like, today, you watch Merez Johnson, and it's something different to actually watch this guy in person, because you see in Michigan, like, his size, his physicality, what he's able to do defensively. And I know there were conversations heading into the draft about, okay, is he a four? Is he a five? Where does he slot in? I think you saw today that he can very easily be a five for you. Like, just be a big bruising center. Be a guy who can use his physicality.
6'9", 7'5", wingspan, 250 pounds. Just to throw some numbers behind it.
Absolutely. For size. And I know the 6'9 factor does make it look at it.
7'5 wingspan, long-standing reach.
Yeah. That, to me, watching him today is like, he's clearly a center. He's clearly a guy who can rim run for you. Again, Cooper Flagg is one of the best pick and roll alley-oop guys. He was in college. He will be in the NBA eventually. I think him and Merez will have an excellent combination. And then defensively, you talk about the versatility between him and Merez, being able to switch, being able to like kind of hunt mismatches. It sounds so exciting. I think that was the most impressive performance of the day for me. I know we talked about AJ DeBonta, Yaxel, Peterson, but Merez was the guy who I'm like, you verified every single thing that I thought about you going into the draft. And that those are the type of performances you want in summer league. This is one thing we got to keep in mind about summer league. If it verifies what you already believe, it's 100% true.
Of course. That's definitely the case. I mean, there's like some deep cut guys that for what it's worth, I barely saw anything besides these two games we've already talked about here. Yeah. I saw Utah-Washington. I saw Dallas-Golden State, and that's it. So, like, on a future podcast, I'll talk about LeBaron Filon and Obuka Okori and all these guys.
Yeah.
But, like, just box score watching – Yoan Berenguer had a really big game for Minnesota.
He did, yeah.
Rocco, their other center, hit a three. Just interesting to monitor what that backup Wolves big man situation could look like.
Yes.
As we're recording this, the Kings and Clippers are happening right now. I look forward to watching that Acuff-Wogler matchup as well. My guy, a deep cut player that I'm a big fan of on Minnesota, Zion Pullen, G League guard out of Florida, entering his third year, had 24 points, 12 assists, 8 boards.
Nice.
He's a really talented guy on a two-way contract last year. I mean, there's just like some interesting guys that stuck out. Carter Bryant had a poor game.
He did have a bad
for San Antonio.
Game.
I'm curious to watch that back. 4-13. I want to know, what did he do with the ball in his hands? Terrence Reed took a three. Interesting. I mean, there's just these things that, you know, standing out in the box score that I'm going to watch sometime tomorrow or sometime on my flight back. That I'm looking forward to. What else stood out to you today besides the Kawhi thing?
We didn't really get into it, but Trey Johnson is just like, he should not be here in summer league. He's too good for this.
Offensively too good for this. Offensively. Defensively.
Yeah. But, well, you know.
It's just summer league.
It is summer league. At the same time, Trey was one of my favorite prospects in the draft last year. And I think his combination with Trey Young in the backcourt can be really, really fun. The shooting, the ability to space the floor is obvious, but some of that in-between game that I've been hoping he developed. He showed a little bit of that in his rookie season. And today against these guys, it was just like, he's very clearly much better than summer league competition. That's another guy, again, that verified some of the beliefs that I have in him, which is that I think he's going to be one of the best players in his draft when it's all said and done. So
the Raptors.
Yeah.
You are with The Athletic and also with Raptors Republic.
Yep.
They're the team you cover. You are from Toronto.
That is true.
It is the team you cheer for.
Yes.
Yeah. What's the feeling of Raptors fans today, given the Kawhi Leonard news that the deal is being held up due to the aspiration investigation? The Raptors still hope the deal happens. They're just waiting because they don't want to take on what potential penalties there could be if they agree to the deal officially beforehand. What's the temperature of Raptors fans today?
Yeah, I think anxiety, and understandably so. You know, you get so excited about the fact that Kawhi Leonard is coming back to Toronto. He was actually at the Kyle Lowry retirement press conference, and so that sort of validated the fact that this was happening. I think for all intents and purposes, just kind of looking and interacting with the Raptors in general, they also feel this is going to happen at some point, whether it's tomorrow, whether it's a week from now, whether it's a month from now. I think both sides assume that this will eventually get done. How does it get done? What does it look like? Does the trade itself change? I think these are valid questions to ask. Does Kawhi get, you know, sent any sort of suspension or fine or something like that? That's another question to ask. But I think there's a rightful sense of anxiety among the fan base because, you know, all of the plans for this Raptors offseason was banking on Kawhi Leonard being traded there. And of course, Kawhi with the injuries and obviously this aspiration situation comes with its bag of questions. But I think this just opens up a level of anxiety to where, all right, what's going to happen next? We don't know. Honestly, this is the worst case scenario, which I don't want to alarm people, would be like Kawhi Leonard's contract gets voided. He becomes an unrestricted free agent. He's free to sign everywhere, anywhere, and nobody has cap space to sign him, you know? So it would create this arms race for how do we clear as much cap space as possible for Kawhi Leonard? It's a fascinating situation. This is unprecedented in basically every single measure. People will bring up Joe Smith, who in the 2000 season, I believe, with the Minnesota Timberwolves circumvented the cap. They came to an agreement. He signed a deal and then basically got more money on top of that. They voided that contract. He got suspended. The Timberwolves ownership got suspended for a year as well.
Crazy,
crazy, crazy fines,
it
crazy
could be.
Punishment. It could be the
could
exact
be
same thing,
be.
Right?
We don't know.
And it could be worse than that because this is worse than that. And it's Kawhi Leonard who's a superstar.
It could be that. We don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be that severe.
I would be surprised, too.
But it could be that severe. And that's why the Raptors are like, yeah, we'll wait.
Yeah.
We'll wait.
Hey, I think it's a smart thing from the Raptors because you don't want to assume any sort of risk in this situation, especially because you are not the wrongdoing party. If anything, they're the victims of the situation from 2019, but that's a different story for another day.
That's all part of it. Like the Raptor, what Uncle Dennis, Uncle Dennis and Kawhi asked for, the Clippers gave, allegedly.
Yes.
The Raptors said, no, we're not going to give you this sponsorship deal, according to the Toronto Star, I believe it was.
Yes, it was. Doug Smith at Toronto Star.
But we'll see what happens there. I'm going to talk more about Kawhi Leonard with Nekias Duncan coming up on the audio podcast. But S, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about Summer League and Kawhi Leonard, AD. This is a lot of fun, man. Thank you, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. And we'll be right back after this break. Joining me from NBA Las Vegas Summer League, Nekias Duncan. Nekias, how are you, man?
I am doing quite well. Excited to be here. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. We got some breaking news today. The Raptors-Clippers deal involving Kawhi Leonard is being held up because of the ongoing NBA aspiration investigation. Through Shams Charania, the Clippers released a statement saying, at the heart of this investigation are Joe Sandberg and aspiration. We did not funnel money to Kawhi Leonard through aspiration. They go on to say they were victims of fraud. The whole story we've heard before regarding what happened with aspiration, Kawhi Leonard, and their deals together. The Raptors are really the reason why this is being held up, though, because in a statement they released through Shams, the NBA League office informed us that as a result of the ongoing investigation involving the Clippers, we would assume the risk of any potential outcome of the investigation impacting Kawhi. In light of this, we will wait until the league's investigation is complete. A perfectly understandable, sensible thing to do for the Toronto Raptors. But at the same time, we are 10 months into this, Nikias, and I'm just waiting for a final decision. Adam Silver is going to get to it so we can get this deal completed or the penalty completed, whatever it is. Let's get a resolution to this whole thing and get it over with.
That's ultimately where I am. Like, I think with something like this, there is the obvious obligation to make sure you are as thorough as possible. You want to turn over any leaf you can. You don't want to leave anything up for chance. I get it. I do think you reach a point where it goes from being thorough to kind of dragging your feet a little bit. At least it seems like that from the outside. I'm obviously working at an information deficit, so I don't want to speculate too much. But after 10 months, you would think there would be some sort of momentum deciding either way how this is going to land. So now that we've gotten to a trade happening, and now a trade being held up because there still hasn't been a resolution. If you remember, there were early rumblings that we were going to find something out near All-Star or shortly after All-Star. Regular season ends, playoff ends, you have the draft, opening a free agency. We're at Summer League now, and we are still waiting on this. It's kind of wild to me, so I just kind of want to see a resolution at some point. And this quickly from Michael Grange, who said, so based on some preliminary convos, one, the NBA wants investigation complete before the deal closes to avoid unintended consequences, i.e. small chance Kawhi contracts get voided. Number two, barring that, the deal will close as agreed. Number three, hope is issued will be resolved by the Board of Governors meeting on Tuesday. So maybe it's early next week that we finally get something, but I just want something. I'm right there with you.
I would hope it's by Tuesday. That would be very nice. I'm sure the Raptors and Clippers would love that too. I think everybody would love that, no matter what the result is of the investigation. I heard about this a few days ago, that this is why the deal hadn't been completed yet. What I also heard was that both teams think it's going to go through. Both teams feel like they expect this is going to happen, that like it's not like the contract is going to be voided and then there's no deal. They expect the deal to go through, to be clear, according to the sources I've spoken to this week. However, they don't know for sure, which is why the Raptors are waiting for the investigation that's been ongoing for 10 months to finally be completed here. And I think for these teams, it seems like a hassle. I don't know if it's been holding up any other moves. I think it's just more like they're just in a waiting stage here. I really can't fathom how we haven't gotten a decision yet, though. It's been 10 months, yeah. Caius. Like, they figured out Watergate quicker than this. Come on!
Oh, you put it that way. It's kind of wild that we're still here. Yeah, this just needs to get done. On the Raptors, like you already alluded to, like it's smart to kind of hold off and wait, because I would be very upset if I push this through just so we can get Kawhi in the building, get the billboards back up, etc. And then later, Kawhi
was there for the Kyle Lowry retirement thing.
Kyle was asked about him. Yeah, it's like if we do this and then Kawhi suspended for 25 games or the contract is voided, and now we're out of Brandon Ingram and Grady Dick and these first round picks and swap. No, we're not letting that happen either. So I get it. Hopefully we get something about Tuesday.
If Kawhi, let's say Kawhi does get a suspension, he just said 25 games. If it's a 25-game suspension, do the Raptors still do the deal?
Ooh.
Maybe they remove a second-round pick or you know something like that?
Honestly, at bare minimum, I feel like the deal has to be altered. Like I take agree. Away one of the first or turn one of the unprotected first into a swap or top 10 protected or whatever the case may be. Because I think for me, I'm kind of banking in some level of regular season maintenance for Kawhi anyway. I don't know if it's going to be 25 games worth. I don't think they want it to be 25 games worth. And so
not with the East as good as it is now. You need to win early.
Yeah. So that I think deal amended if it's 25. Anything more than that, you probably just have to say no.
Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? We'll find out possibly Tuesday. Possibly Tuesday. If we learn more about that, we'll update you on the pod. But that's all we know for now regarding that. We are here at Summer League. And we are here Thursday, recording this on Thursday, before A.J. DiBonta, before Darren Peterson and all the other guys debuting tonight. But I want to focus with you on Friday, Nikias, because we get tomorrow night on Friday, Caleb Wilson versus Cameron Boozer, a matchup of the third pick Boozer, the fourth pick Wilson. We saw them face off during the college basketball season with some two really great matchups between Duke and North Carolina. I can't wait for this game. These two bigs, I feel like with AJ versus DP already having a rivalry going back to high school, and then Wilson versus Boozer, this like could be the start of these two guys having two big matchups every year during the NBA regular season, starting here in Summer League. What are your expectations of these guys? And also, I'm just curious in general, since you don't do a lot of draft, but now you're following these guys in Summer League, what's your assessment of Boozer and Wilson and what you're looking for in these games on Friday?
Yeah, I think for me, on a positive note, like I have no expectations for this matchup because as you mentioned, I'm not someone that does a bunch of draft stuff. Like I have people that I read and I follow that I trust and I can kind of get a sense of what these archetypes are. And then when I watch the tourney or I have a Synergy account. I can load up some clips and things like that. I can get more of a feel. But summer league is when I get my first deep dive, let me take some notes on these guys type of situation. And so with Caleb, his dimensions, his athleticism, his versatility, I'm excited to see what that looks like with Cam Boozer, especially with the way that Memphis has already looked to move him around the board offensively. We'll post you up. We'll let you run some pick and roll. We'll have you at the high post and use you as a passer. Like, what does that look like against Caleb Wilson? And even with Chicago, we saw them in the regular season. They were pretty activity-based defensively. Are we going to see Caleb Wilson at the level? Are we going to see him navigating screens? Is there going to be some switchability here? Similar questions I have with Dalen Swain on the Chicago side. Like, what are they going to ask him to do defensively? But that's kind of where my excitement lies. Like, it's going to be a clash of styles. And it's also fun to kind of get a broader look at what are these teams trying to do. Like, Memphis was one of the top three teams in terms of average pickup point defensively last year. They wanted to press you full court. Is that going to carry over into this season? If so, what does that look like with Cam Boozer on the floor and some of these smaller guards that they have in the rotation? So that's kind of where I start with a matchup like this.
When people talk about Cameron Boozer, one of the criticisms of him is about his athleticism and what it's going to translate to in the defensive end of the floor. Some people say it's a bit overblown. He's more economical with his movements. He tested basically equal to Caleb Wilson, who's thought of as one of the best athletes in the draft class. What's something you'll be watching for from Boozer this weekend in Vegas to feel more confident when it comes to assessing his defense moving forward in the NBA?
I think for me, I want to give a quick shout out to my guy Ben Pfeiffer, who pointed this out in the breakdown of the Boozer debut in particular. I want to see what the closeouts look like. Is he able to kind of contain? What is the footwork going to look like there? Going back to his most recent summer league game, like getting a couple of goaltends, I was like, well, you don't want it to be late, but it's cool that he's getting vertical and he's at least high-pointing some of these. So, like, does the timing on that kind of thing get better? And then, again, broader sense for Memphis, what are they asking him to do? When he is in action, is he being asked to switch? And if so, obviously the on-ball defense, the closeouts are going to be more important. If they're asking him to drop or they're having him hedge out or whatever, what does that look like? What do the recoveries look like? That's kind of where I want to see. Like, how many things do the Memphis Grizzlies ask him to do? And then from there, like, how comfortable does he look? He's going to lose some reps, but is it going to be you look out of water or this player just got the best of you?
I can't wait to see Boozer. Just I think offensively, so I mean, he's just so good. He's like a vet. We saw that when he was playing in the Salt Lake City Summer League. The dude looks like an NBA veteran just out there dropped on an NBA floor. Just the way he commands an offense, the amount of versatile actions that he can be used in, high post, low post, pick and roll as a ball handler, as a screener, spot up shooting. Like, he was taking mid-range pull-ups, which is something that was kind of taken out of his diet at Duke this past season at a lower volume there in Shire's offense. So, like, I think he's, like, adding these skills on the offensive end that make him just truly an all-around do-it-all beast. And I think for people that, like, question his upside, I hope we see in Friday's game against Wilson with those guys matched up where it's like, ah, Boozer can do all of these things. And then I hope with Wilson, we see he had a matchup, Duke versus North Carolina. This is like something you should watch. He had a first half in the game where he was just like splashing jumper after jumper after jumper, turnaround from the baseline, defended by Boozer. It's like, oh my God, this guy looks like Kevin Garnett. He looks like a star. He looks amazing. And then he really cooled off scoring in the second half, which was the theme of the season. But with Wilson, he did shoot over 40% on mid-range jumpers this past season. I've heard he's really shot the hell out of it in pre-draft workouts, which open gym, we saw Mitchell Robinson, pre-draft shoot well from three-point range. I don't know what it means, but I hope we also see Wilson just show a new layer of his skill on offense besides run and dunk, drive attack closeouts.
I think that's fair. Can I ask you a Boozer question?
Sure.
Actually, within that vein, how have you, because one of the things that popped for me was not him just making threes. It was the type of threes that he took, his comfort pulling against like low contest, slight contest. Where are you at on his shooting projection?
Pretty high on it. Pretty high on it. I think as you look at the trajectory, earlier in high school, he was more of an iffy shooter. He became an elite shooter in high school by his senior year. I interviewed him earlier in the year, and I asked him about his shooting. I was like, people critique your shooting. He's like, people who critique my shooting don't know what they're talking about. He's like, as a senior, I shot 47% from three in a high volume. I was like, whoa, dude, relax.
Not me. But I didn't say that.
I'm saying people have said that. but he's right. Like, he did shoot really well as a senior because of his year-by-year progress, and it carried over to Duke. In the NBA, I think the key thing I'm concerned about with him is, like, does it translate off the dribble? Because that is truly the star quality, the ability to create a bucket at the end of the shot clock in fourth quarters. And that's where with Boozer, people question the upside in comparison to A.J. DeBonta and Darren Peterson, which is why he went third. behind those guys. Though Peterson and Nivans are perceived as higher efficiency late game scorers, in addition to having a whole host of other skills. So I think with Boozer, that's what I'm looking for. How does the shooting off the dribble happen now versus year one, year two, year three, year four, deeper into the future?
Okay, I think that's fair. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I think with Boozer, that is a question. And I think with both these teams, there's like a lot of interesting things on the Bulls side. Like, we're going to see Asenge. He played three games as a rookie before he had an injury that knocked him out for the year. We saw him get yammed on by Johnny Furphy a year from now. Eric over at Yahoo Sports, who helped create the Ask Kevin O'Connor Scout AI thing we had in my draft guide. And Eric's here with his family, and his kids recognize Noah Asenge, which is like a really deep cut player for kids under 12 to recognize. And Eric asked him, "How'd you recognize Noah Asenge?" And they're like, "He got dunked on." They pull up.
Yeah, that can't be the career highlight.
That can't be. And I have a level of belief in Noah Asenge that he can do more than that. But between Josh Giddey and Matis Ruzelas and Caleb Olson, Noah Asenge, what the hell are the Bulls building, Nikias? What is going on in Chicago?
They are aiming for a lot of skilled size, which I like conceptually. It is a tightrope to walk, though, because you talked a little bit about like the off-the-dribble shooting with Cam Boozer. We got to see how much of that translates for Caleb Wilson. Matas Muzelis shot better from three this year and did so on real volume this year, which is exciting. But you don't want to get in a situation where, because you're aiming for skilled size, it just becomes easy to switch against you because everyone is the same size. And if you don't have enough guys that can punish different types of defenders, then you're going to still be in a bit of a rut in the half-court offense. And that was kind of the bit with Chicago before people got hurt, people got traded, et cetera. Is that when they were able to get out and run with Josh Giddey just spraying the ball all over the place, they could beat anybody on any given night. If they don't get those transition opportunities, what advantages are you creating in the half court? And so I'm intrigued by them having all these 6'8", 6'9", 6'10 dudes that can handle the ball a little bit and can attack. But there is going to have to be a level of off the dribble creation. It really just more juice off the dribble in general.
And shooting.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things with Daylan Swain as well. They draft him with the 16th pick or 15th pick. And there's like, he can handle, he can create, he has size, he can defend, but can he shoot? Like, he was a horrible shooter at the college level. I interviewed him the day before the draft, and he said to me, "I used to be a knockdown shooter when I was young, and I'm going to show that I can still be that." We'll see. I mean, I don't know what happened. I don't know how he lost his shot if he supposedly was at youth levels. When I see it, I'll believe it with Daylan Swain. But I do think that's a key choice for them, and it speaks to what you're talking about with size across positions, because they don't necessarily have a traditional guard type of player to build with in the future, unless you're high on Rob Dillingham.
I'm intrigued by Rob Dillingham. I've liked some of the flashes. The defense just has to get to a certain level.
It's tiny.
Yeah, and then there's just general decision-making stuff, but I'm trying to balance how much of that is his actual processing versus he is a young guard that hasn't gotten consistent minutes. So I'm curious to see if he actually does get a consistent 18 minutes a night, and if he's able to kind of build on that.
And then with Memphis, Zach Edey, Cam Boozer, Cedric Coward, Kareem Lopez, who we may not see on Friday. I don't think we're going to see him with the hamstring recovery. Coward, Jalen Wells, Omax Prosper.
Yes. They're
just so deep and loaded with talented young players, and yet they also have some vets. Ty Jerome coming off the bench or starting potentially. Scottie Pippen. Either way, we'll see there with those guys up and down the roster. I'm intrigued by Memphis as a team that could, since we're in Vegas, just hit the over by a large fashion. And the over-unders have not been released yet for Memphis. And I don't gamble much, Nikias, but I am waiting for that Memphis Grizzlies over-under to be released, because I'm thinking over with that team with how talented they are. They were a plus 17 net rating with Edey on the floor last year. Dominant. Dominant. And now they added Cam Boozer, who might be borderline all-star as a rookie. Year two Cedric Coward. Healthy Ty Jerome. Like, talk me out of this.
I don't gamble, so I can't go that far. But I am also intrigued with the Memphis Grizzlies. That's top 10 in EPM, Zach Edey, by the way. But no, they just have a lot of talent.
Dunksandthrees.com EPM.
There you go. There you go. But they just have so much intriguing talent. And I'm glad you mentioned Ty Jerome. I talked about this on the Dunker Spot a little bit. I understand why people didn't watch Memphis towards the end of the year after trading everyone away and we're shutting some people down and all this
tanking,
good stuff.
Tanking. Ugly.
Ty Jerome was really freaking good before he also got shut down towards the end of the season. But like,
elite, too good, that's why.
Yeah, elite shooting splits, incredible driver, audacious passer, shoot off the bounce. He's very good. And so if you're talking me into we've got defenders, we got versatility, we got Ty Jerome that can kind of shepherd the offense. Zach Edey can mash you. And as we saw before he went down last year, they were figuring some things out with him defensively. Like, he looked more comfortable. But beyond that, this is how we want to pressure before you cross half court. This is the amount of help that we're showing around the elbows, around the nail area to make sure we can insulate him a little bit. And then if you get to the rim, yeah, have fun shooting over that tall guy. If they can have a functional defense around Zach Edey, and then you can kind of downsize into Cam Boozer plus Isaiah Stewart, or Isaiah Stewart plus, if you want to go Cedric Howard at the four, and then go with Scotty and Jalen and whoever else. Like, they have some buttons that they can press, and they don't have, like, an obvious star or star name to kind of capitulate to, no disrespect, but, like, it could very much be everyone just does their roles, and it's kind of feeling. It could be kind of similar to, well, I guess the Suns have Devin Booker, so that's a different thing. But just in general, we just all have more freedom. We're all more empowered to do more things. And now we could all just kind of be greater than the sum of our parts. Like, I'm kind of in with you with Memphis.
I'm excited for them. I'm worried the over-under is going to be too high. I'm worried it's going to be like 41.5. I'm like, 500? I don't know. We'll see. But I think they'll go over 500, but I want the over-under to be like 28.5.
Okay.
So I can just mash it.
We'll be right back.
Let's draft some players that we want to watch here at Las Vegas Summer League, Nikias. Okay. We're going to exclude players that played on Thursday, and we're going to exclude the Bulls and the Grizzlies since we just spent a long time talking about them. So this is every other team that's starting on Friday, the players we want to watch. We're going to each pick five. You want to start us off, Nikias?
Yeah, let's do it. I don't know how long we're going to see this guy, but when I saw his name on the Summer League roster, I was like, absolutely, I am tapping in. Kali Murray-Boyles, hello, with the Toronto Raptors, who are always one of my favorite Summer League watchers. They don't always win, but like in terms of the defense, they are just going to be the most active and physical defense in Summer League pretty much year in and year out. And with the rookie season that Kali Murray-Boyles had, and with the playoff run that he had, I want to see what it looks like when he gets to experiment a little bit more with the ball. There are already some early rumblings. They're going to ask him more. They're going to give him the freedom to take more threes. We're going to see how much that carries over, what that looks like. Because if he can shoot threes with any sort of efficiency or any sort of volume, that unlocks more of him aside, you know, alongside another big. Obviously, the lineups with him and Scotty Barnes, which were already successful last year, that gets even better. If both of those guys can kind of step out and knock down some shots. I start with Kali Murray-Boyles. He's already one of my favorite young players in the league. Insane defender already. Monster on the offensive glass. Has showcased a little bit of touch from the mid-range as well. So, like, I just want to see him expand the offensive game. This is the platform for him to do so. That's where I start.
There have been many players compared to Draymond Green. Is Colin Murray-Boyles the closest thing we've seen to Draymond Green?
Ooh, that's a good one. Off the top of my head, yes, at least defensively. For him to be as comfortable on the perimeter as he is, and, like, they stashed him on fives early on. And he's given up size. He looked at home for most of last year. Probably. I want to see more hub work from him offensively if I can, like, fully get there, but probably so.
Need more shooters for that hub work you're talking about.
That's also true. That is also true. Unless we're just doing just the high-low duck-ins. Like, you're switching area anyway. Scotty just bully somebody. But I can see where it's coming from, though.
My first choice, Kasperis Jakarčonis
with
the Milwaukee Bucks. Your ex-Heat player traded to Milwaukee. Didn't play a whole lot as a rookie in Miami, but what intrigues me with him is, so at Illinois, as a freshman, he was a dynamic scorer, creator, could get into the paint, really talented three-point shooter, this and that. But then he would follow up these like amazing plays with just like head-scratching, face-palm decisions as a passer where you're like, what are you doing? Like, this is so frustrating. And that's why I think in part he fell out of the lottery at number 20 to the Heat. But then, so in college, he had a 1.3 assist to turnover ratio. As a rookie with the Heat in very limited minutes, he had a 2.7 assist to turnover ratio. And you watch him, obviously it's limited sample, but like he looked like he was playing a more advanced, mature style, and I just really look forward to seeing what it's going to be like this coming season with Milwaukee, where I'll have a much longer leash on a team that's not going to win a lot of games and that is going to be focused on development. And I can't wait to see if it starts to pop up this weekend here in Vegas after a year of development in the NBA under the Miami Heat culture system. What's it going to look like here with the Bucks with his new teammates by his side?
I'm so mad because in my notes, he's literally the top guard that I have. And so you snagging him first really hurts my heart, but it also makes me feel better about having on the list. Shot 42% from three last year. And towards the end of the season where he was getting more consistent minutes, like, audacious is probably too strong of a word, but he didn't mind letting it fly. And that's on top of, again, more patience and pick and roll when he got to Random, because, as you know, Miami didn't run a ton of ball screens, ramped up towards the end of the year, but still was pretty low. Yeah, him with the leash off a little bit in a lower stakes situation in Milwaukee, or at least expected to be a lower stakes situation, I'm excited to see what he looks like. So I echo your sentiments on that front. Are we going snake style here? Okay.
No, you go next. Okay, we're alternate.
Okay, fair enough. All right, I would like to see, I guess I'll just round out the front court for me then. Adaibara?
Okay, love it.
That's where I want to go.
Love it.
A lot of size. You give me a big man that can pass, like I'm already kind of in, when he's also massive and also an insane interior defender. Like, we already got to see him versus Cam Boozer a little bit earlier in the week. I just want to see more of him. I want to see him tested more defensively. I'm sure teams are going to try to put him in action. How well do you hold up? What does it look like? If OKC mixes in some late switches, how well is he going to hold up in that regard? And offensively, is it just going to be the hub work? How many post-ups do we get? Do we get the Walker Kessler-esque, yeah, sure, I'll just take this three because I'm in summer league and let's see if I can lay a quiet foundation. So maybe in year three, wait a minute, he's taking two threes a game. What is this type situation? I'll round out my front court with Mr. Mara.
I like Mara. I'm excited to see Mara. I think he's awesome. I think he's going to be look like a major steal for Oklahoma City very, very quickly this year. I'm going to go with Ugo Gonzalez with the Boston Celtics. Ugo had a pretty good showing with the Spanish team this offseason, showing more off the dribble, more with the ball in his hands. And that's a big contrast to what he did this past season with Boston, which was stand in the corner, hit spot up threes, hustle, cut, crash the boards, play just with maximum effort all the time on the defensive end of the floor. And he's one of the best hustle players in the league already. This is in part why Boston was reportedly unwilling to put him on the table in Giannis Antetokounmpo conversations, because they want to keep Ugo as a player moving forward. So I can't wait to see what types of ball skills he shows with the ball in his hands this weekend in Vegas. Is he going to show enough now with this big void? No Jaylen Brown. More usage for Tatum. More usage for Pritchard. Paul George is there. But who's the young guy that's going to absorb some of those touches? Is it Baylor Shireman? Is it Ugo Gonzalez? Is he going to be a guy to step into that void? I think it could be. And this is where we can see the beginnings of that.
Okay. I like that pick. It was also on my board. So sad to erase him, but I'll give you the hat tip on that front. I'll stick in the wing room, dear. I'll go with Phoenix. We're going to go with Rashear Fleming.
Oh, I love this one.
In this one. The flashes last year for me were fun. He was immediately tasked with defending players that he probably shouldn't have been in year one, but he does profile as a really good defender moving forward. So I'm glad he got the early reps there. The three-point shooting was going to be the immediate swing skill for him. Looked better as the year went on, but still not a high enough volume. And then you got to some situations to where there were some record scratches. It's like, well, if you're not going to shoot, in addition to how teams are guarding you, you're just going to have to sit next to us. I am still of the mind I would have liked to have seen more of him in the first round series against OKC. Like, if you were going to lose it anyway, like, give him some experience on that front. But yeah, it's going to be willingness to shoot. I think the defense is absolutely going to pop in this setting, as it already does. How willing will he be to shoot? Will we get some fun drives from him? I think if he's playing off of advantages off the ball, like, he's already shown he's a really good cutter, he can get busy on the offensive glass as well. So it's just, what is the on-ball equity looking like? What does the shooting volume look like? He's going to be a really fun defender in this setting. So.
That's a good one. That's a very good one. I'm going to, for what it's worth, my team, I didn't think about positions. So I don't have a front court. I just have five names. You might have this guy on your list for backcourt player, so I might be snatching him. Ryan Conwell with the Miami Heat. Is he on your list? 37th pick? The reason why I can't wait to see Conwell, you know, we saw him as in the California Classic, but here in Vegas as well. 37th pick on a two-way contract. But if the Heat don't get LeBron, they need more ball handlers.
Yeah.
They need a guy to come off the bench and handle the rock. And Conwell's a four-year player from the college level, averaged 18 points per game, a three-level scorer, a bruiser at the rim, a talented three-point shooter, can get to the mid-range, solid passer as well. In my draft guide, my comp for Conwell was Norm Powell.
That's funny.
And so it's like he's going to the team that just lost Norm Powell. And so I just want to know, and we'll find out during the season, but it starts here during Summer League, can he offer something as a rookie to this depleted Miami Heat ball handler room. So yes, Conwell is high on my list.
Former Heat guard on your list, current Heat guard on your list. I am disappointed, but not surprised. That is unbelievable. But no, I'm right there.
This is unintentional.
I'm right there, Willie. They're going to need his creation. Probably a little bit more. I can't wait for like the Gabe Vincent game from him.
Yeah.
Randomly in January. It's like, oh, well, he just dropped 18 off the bench. Where did this come from? And people, and like the Heat did it again. But no, I love that pick. I guess speaking of the California Classic, I talked about him a little bit last week on the dunker spot, but Cameron Carr, Los Angeles Lakers, is someone that I was immediately enamored with as much as I could be, because again, I don't do a ton of draft work heading in. But I was like, ooh, this guy has a massive wingspan. He seems to be a very good athlete. He shoots the leather off the ball. I want to see what this looks like. Now, he may weigh like 18 pounds, so that could be a problem as we get into actual NBA regular season games. But I love the way that the Lakers used him during the California Classic, just a whole bunch of pin downs and staggers, quick handoffs. Some of the pick and roll reps were interesting. I was like, oh, he's got some passing chops that I did not anticipate here when he got guys at the level. And so as we shift to Vegas and seeing different competition, I want to see how much of that actually gets to carry over. I also want to see, since he played in the California Classic, how much is he going to play while we're here in Vegas. But in general, I'm super intrigued. And you look at the Lakers overall, like, they obviously want more athleticism in the room. They want some shooting in the room. He can provide that. If he can hold up well enough defensively and can absorb body blows and absorb drives well enough, it's not hard for me to map out him earning some rotation minutes pretty early on. I think Luka's going to love throwing hit-aheads to him. And if he's getting two on the ball, that's a guy that can knock down corner threes. And if they can sprinkle in random pin-downs for him, he can shoot off movement or get downhill on some attacks. I think he could provide some sneaky value early on. So Cameron Carr is on my list.
I think he could play right away as a rookie. Especially he's a little older. I think, like you said, the weight is an issue with him. He does need to get stronger. I worry about that more in the playoffs for sure. Can he finish games? Can he handle, you know, defending a star-level 6'8" forward? Maybe not as a rookie, but can he shoot? Can he drive to the basket? Can he make the right pass? Can he finish loudly at the rim? Check, 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 check on all those. And I'm sure J.J. Redick is really going to find a role for him that works in the same ways that he did pre-Dalton Connect trade. Before Connect's career kind of went off the rails. But I think with Cameron Carr, there's something there that could make him an instant impact rookie for the Lakers. And we'll see if they have any more moves coming, the Lakers. I'm a little up and down with their offseason, in part just due to the value aspect, giving up what they did for Walker Kessler. But I wonder if like a year from now, when we look at the names on the page, we're going to be like, oh yeah, this roster actually makes a lot of sense around Luka. What's your assessment of the current Lakers roster?
It's funny you ask. I wrote about that on yahoosports.com, so you can check that out. Quick plug. But no, in all seriousness, I was like, I like these moves individually. I can see how this works and how it makes them better. The Walker Kessler thing, I am a fan. He obviously needs to stay healthy, but I am a fan. I think he's going to help them defensively quite a bit. And I think offensively, it's easy to see how he slots in as a screen and roller. Has to get better at screening. But I think the pacing of Luka and the pacing of Austin Reeves fits a little bit better with how he rolls to the basket. He should get opportunities there. And the role players I like, I'm a huge Mamu fan. And so I'm curious to see if they actually work to start him or if they're going to have him as more like your Turbo Six man. I like him more in the latter role than the former. But Colin Sexton's going to compete every night. Put him at the point of attack. He's not a great on-ball defender, but at the very least, if you want to ramp up your full court pressure, he could be annoying for a little bit and just give you a different look. And so I like what they did. I don't love giving up the rest of your pick haul to get Walker Kessler, but I do like adding Walker Kessler. Like, 50-plus wins for the Los Angeles Lakers is not out of the question for me at all. Like, I think they're going to be better this year.
How much stock do you put in that Walker Kessler shot over 70% from the free throw line and, like, 45-50% from three over five games last year? It's six if you want to include a preseason game. As a big who has always tried to become a shooter, was there anything earlier in the year last year with Utah that indicates that this could be sustainable for him as a competent threat from outside and from the line?
The line I'm more intrigued with threes, like, even if they make them, I don't think he's going to take enough for defenses to be like, we have to close out on that guy. And even if they do close out on him, I don't really trust him beating closeouts as a driver. And so
it's like Brooke Lopez style threes.
Yeah. So I think there'll be some trail stuff. Like, they're going to use him in some delay actions, I would imagine. And so if it's that the guy that's guarding me is at the free throw line, well, forget the handoff. I will just take this. Like, sprinkling those in, like, I wouldn't mind that. Within the flow, I think we're a couple of years away from it actually mattering. I think is where I'm at.
A cherry on top skill, in your opinion, for Walker Kessler. I'm just intrigued. I'm intrigued because he's always thought, I'm a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, last year he was in five games, only five games. But we'll see if it sustains for him. But I'm curious there with him. My next pick, Mohamed Diawara from the New York Knicks. No, no.
I was gonna sneak it in. I'm so sad. Great job. Tell us why.
Mo Diawara was like a hidden gem this year for the New York Knicks. So much so that Knicks fans didn't even want to talk about him. They were afraid that people would
start looking.
Yeah, start looking. And he signs a 4-year, $10 million contract. And the Knicks fans are like, finally. We can talk about him now. He's awesome.
We got Pascal at home.
Exactly. They do. Shot 37% from three last year, attacked in straight lines off closeouts, showed off some versatility in the defensive end of the floor. 6'9", 6'10", size. I mean, there's something here with this guy.
Yeah. And that's exactly why I'm so excited to watch him, because I would imagine, especially looking at the Knicks roster, he should get quite a bit of on-ball opportunities. And so I think the people that aren't familiar with who he is, they're going to see some of those drives and be like, wait, what the heck is this? Where did he come from? Why did he not play last year? And if we get more minutes from him this year, like, hey, man, like just keep your eye out on him. I love the pick. I'm sad that I didn't get to make it. But I do so indeed love
you
the
you
pick.
Stole Mara from me.
That is fair. That is fair. Oh, man, I think where do I want to go with this last pick? I'm going to go guard. You have taken the Miami Heat off the board. Honestly, I'm just going to go personal fave. I'm going to go Yuki Kawamura. That's nice. What I like. Because the little bit that we've seen in the NBA, it's always fun. I still get the heart still warms for me, like the him and Ja interactions when he was in Memphis. But it feels like you get the summer league or even the preseason, like the guy just drives all over the place. He does not mind pulling from deep. He's a fun playmaker on top of that. And so I don't know what the NBA prospects are because of the size and some of the defense, but he just always seems to show out in this particular setting. And so if we're just talking general excitement level, who we want to see on Friday, especially in Indiana, I am enamored. And so I think that's where I'll go with my last pick.
I like it. I mean, I'll go with a personal guy for this last one as well. Zaire Smith. Zaire Smith, if you're like, Zaire Smith, that name rings a bell. Yeah, that's the guy who the Sixers traded for on draft night. It was announced while Mikal Bridges was at the podium wearing a Sixers hat in front of Sixers logos behind him. His mom worked for the team. They traded Mikal Bridges. They got Zaire Smith, who missed 6 weeks. He's in the hospital for 6 weeks because of a peanut allergy, and he lost 60 pounds in the hospital. He almost died, and he had injuries that knocked him out, just a series of events that really caused him just to fall out of the NBA picture pretty quickly in his career. Well, he spent the last 3 years in the G League. He shot 38% from three during that stretch, which is very important for him because he entered the NBA as raw shooter, couldn't shoot at all. And now he's shooting. He still hustles. He's still an athlete. He's only 27 years old, playing for the Lakers Summer League team right now. I'm intrigued. Is there any NBA future for Zaire Smith? So he's just an intriguing guy that kind of got lost in the shuffle that, hey, who knows? Who knows? Maybe he'll get an opportunity.
No, I love that one. Also on the list, one of the four Lakers I considered before I landed on Cam Carr, because he's just been so fun. I do just hope, from a personal standpoint, I just hope he's able to make it stay healthy and carve out an NBA career. Because like he had the pedigree coming in, he was worth the bet. You can't predict any of that happening. You know what I mean? And so I'm just glad he's going to be out on the court. So I love that pick. How many people did you consider for this?
I had 9. I figured that was enough. I mean, really, honestly, I wrote an article yesterday with 50. So I already
okay.
I had 50 players to watch in Summer League, and there's still like some players I left off. It's like I wrote most of it when Ugo wasn't announced to be on the Celtics roster. He wasn't on my written list, but he's on my audio list, my video list.
Gotcha.
But so I had 9 guys, but really I wrote an article with 50 guys, and there's more, you know, extras on there that didn't make it as well.
I feel so much better now. A lot. I don't know if I actually got to 50, but like as I always do with like award stuff or anything or any of these kind of exercises, it's like, all right, let's list the teams. Let's get the guys that I like. And then from there, like, okay, let's whittle this down to my favorite, like 15. Then get from 15 to 10, get from 10 to 8 or whatever the case may be. And then just kind of play roulette since you took,
Diawara, Conwell, Yakachonis. Did I take Gonzalez too?
Yes.
were they four of your top five? Or for like the guard wings?
Yeah, they were the wings that I was kind of looking at. And so it's like, but it makes sense that you wrote 50. You had everybody there. Can I get into some quick honorable mentions while we are here? Okay, so UConn guys. So I'm excited to see Tristan Newton again. I want to see if he's actually able to carve out something. So that's going to be fun. I can't quit Alondis Williams. Like, give me a wing that can play make, a wing that can drive. Like, I just want to see what that looks like. Let's see in spot number, what feels like spot five at this point, if he's able to carve out something. But the Boston context is interesting to me. I already talked about Mara, but Bennett Sturts, I want to see. Otega Owe, I want to see. I want to see him defend more than anything. What does Brooks Barnhuizer look like? Some interesting flashes during, I think, the Salt Lake City portion of Summer League. Let's see if he's able to build on that. Young Hansen is on the Blazers Summer League team again. He was one of the bigs I was looking at primarily here. They want to add him in. Rookie season wasn't very kind.
He had more turnovers than made shots last year as a rookie.
Yeah. But, like, again,
in garbage time. Yeah. All like 100% garbage time minutes. Mm-hmm. More turnovers than made shots.
Yeah, like, that's not great. It's not great. But, like, tall man that can pass, like, I'm always just going to kind of be in. And this is Summer League, so let's have some fun.
I want to have fun with him, too. Yes.
Yeah, so the Phoenix Suns as a concept, like, I mentioned Rasheer Fleming, but I have Jameer Nelson Jr. down because I'm just like, man, I'm just old. What do you mean Jameer Nelson is on the roster? So it's like, okay, what kind of guard play we get here? Koa Pete, since, like, so many people that I read and listen to just did not love Koa staying in the draft.
He shoots.
Which, yeah. And so I think him and Nate Ahmed are kind of in the same boat for me, where it's just like, the people I trust seem to have some real fascination with him. I'm like, surely it can't be this bad. So, like, I just want to watch him and see what it looks like. On the opposite end of the spectrum, I just haven't seen Mykal Brown yet, so I just want to see what that looks like in Brooklyn. Which, brief aside, Yegor Joman just driving all over the place last week is interesting to me, because if the shot, he already shot well last year. If the drives are there, then that he just turns into a totally different guard. So we'll see what that means for that context. Who else do we want to get into here? Naquan Tomlin's on the Cavs Summer League team. Will he show any sort of ball skill? Is where I'm intrigued. Myron Gardner, I will get one Heat name in that I hope wasn't on your list.
No, he was
but
not, no.
Annoyed a lot of people last year. Certainly gets after it defensively. Can't remember which game it was, but just the random like 4 or 5 3 game he had last year. Like, what does the offensive projection look like on that front? Braden Burries, I haven't seen yet, so I want to see him in Milwaukee. I think out of the interest of time, I will end it there. But those are some names I wanted to make sure that I said on the podcast.
I had Brooks Barnhuizer on my long list. I had Nate Ament on it. I had Alan Graves as well, mm-hmm. from the Raptors. Kind of could be a Mamu replacement. Those were my extras. Amara, I mentioned that you used earlier on your list. So my final five was Jakachonis, Gonzalez, Conwell, Diawara, and Zaire Smith. 27 years old in summer. What was your five you chose?
We got Yuka Kamara. We got Cameron Carr. We got Rasheer Fleming. We got Colin Murray-Boyles. We got Ademar.
I think your team would win. I think your team would mash, just destroy my team. But I wasn't thinking about building a competent team. I just, guys I want to watch. Nikias, anything else you're looking forward to out here in Las Vegas? Basketball or non-basketball? You going to the Sphere at all?
I haven't been to the Sphere yet. I might need to try to sneak out there. But for me, it's just going to be a bunch of basketball. Naturally, Summer League.
See the Wizard of Oz.
I might need to tap in. I need to do something non-basketball related while I'm out here. But it's primarily going to be Summer League. The Aces are playing the Mercury on Saturday. They're playing the Fever on Sunday. So I'll be at both of those games as well. So I'll be soaking that portion in. Other than that, it's just catching up with the media pals and seeing whoever else is out here. Again, try to
catch
find
up at the Sphere.
Really pushing the speed. You know what? I might have to look into it. I may have to look
the
into
Knicks
it.
The Knicks won the finals. Go bring some Knicks friends. Just and go to the Sphere. Maybe Dolan will be there. Maybe your face, like, it's like he said something about Dolan and the Knicks. Now he has like the security. Mm. I worried about that the first time I went to the Sphere. I was like, I was there opening night for U2. Okay. And I was like standing in line, like, wait a minute. What if I get stopped because of the security system that he has? And I didn't. I was there, and that was one of the best nights ever. But.
Glad you didn't get – there we go.
Be careful with actually the Knicks friends, actually. Maybe don't bring them. You never know.
Yeah, let's not get anybody in trouble. Only thing I wanted to add, aside from thank you for having me on, quick shout-out to Charles Bassey. Just wanted to say.
Oh, yes.
Signing announced. I like him.
It's a good fit for him, Golden State. There we go. They need a big – where do you think LeBron goes?
Well, I've been pretty bent on, like, surely he just plays with Steph and Draymond, especially since Draymond opted out. But all the noise seems to be that Golden State isn't going to be the place. And so –
unless they trade for AD.
Yeah, and I don't know if they want to do – they don't want to attach the pick to Jimmy, sure. Apparently. Probably, but I can understand why you don't.
Why keep Steph and Draymond around if you're just not going to try to win a championship? Like, what's the point?
I feel like we've been saying that for multiple.
Yes.
They may just be okay.
It's absurd. It is truly absurd if they won't trade a guy that's on a torn ACL mm-hmm. with some future picks that might be in the 20s or the teens. Might be nothing. It might be a crappy draft if it's in the top five. Who cares? You got Stephen Curry, still a top 10 player in the league at worst. Still possibly top four, top five. Like, let's be serious here. They should go for AD if AD is acquirable, which I believe he is, despite what the Wizards are signaling. This is just public negotiations.
Okay, I understand. Like, I wouldn't be mad at it, for sure. But I think a top four of Steph, and you have AD, you could build out something nice. I would still kind of worry about just general injury stuff with them. And so I think part of the risk is also, if we do trade Jimmy, we trade this pick equity, like, Steph, as great as he is, like, I don't think he's playing another 8 years. If we do all of this and then Draymond misses time and Steph misses time and AD misses more time, like, what do we actually do?
Could be disgusting.
Yeah. So, like,
there is risk.
There is risk. So that's where I understand it. I'm probably more inclined with you, like, go for it, because I would personally want to see it. I do think they could be really good together. But I'm not mad at them saying, let's just stick with what we got here.
But you want LeBron back in Miami?
I've been kind of fuzzy on it. Like, it feels like a clunkier offensive fit than I would like. And LeBron in 2026, all due respect, if he's defending threes, like, I don't really love that with where he is. But it is also LeBron. And so if you're telling me, hey, Davion Mitchell is running pick and rolls for you, or LeBron is controlling the offense, like, I think that's a very easy choice. He obviously has the history. A lot of things have apparently been mended in Miami. And so it's not something that I would dislike or poo-poo or anything like that. It's just, like, I'm not jumping off my couch saying, please, Miami, do the darn thing.
I hope he makes a choice soon. It seems like it's not going to happen this weekend here in Las Vegas. During at least the beginning of Summer League, but who knows?
Now I have a question for you. What do we get first, the LeBron decision or the Kawhi decision?
It's a good question. I'm going to say we get the Kawhi decision first, okay. Tuesday
okay.
or Wednesday. I think the LeBron stuff might actually drag out. I think it's because they need to see the AD situation play out. I think that's the real reason why.
Okay.
That they need to see how that plays out, whether it's Golden State or somebody else. Trading for Anthony Davis. So we'll see. Who knows? Maybe by the time this podcast even drops, LeBron might make a decision. We might see a notification on our phones. But as far as I know, it hasn't happened. Nikias, people got to check out you and Steve with the Dunker Spot. Everything you write over at Yahoo Sports covering the NBA and the W. Thank you so much for joining me here in Vegas, man.
Thanks for having me, man. It's a blast.
Big thank you to S. Barahini and Nikias Duncan for joining me on today's episode. Thank you to Emmy and the whole team, especially the people here at Summer League, at Thomas and Mack Center for helping put together today's episode. We'll be back again next week with more Summer League talk, more stuff going on around the NBA. Lots going on here in the NBA. Have a good weekend.